Stand, please.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-5257, St. Mark's Place Housing Company, Inc. et al. Appellants versus United States Department of Housing and Urban Development et al. Mr. Meister for appellants, Mr. Whitaker for appellees.
Mr. Meister, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, if it please the court, Stephen Meister, Meister, Selig, and Fine for the plaintiff's appellants here in this case. Your Honors, I would like to start briefly with the procedural issue since the court issued a sua sponte order to show cause on that issue. It would appear that Federal Rule Civil Procedure 58 did not end the confusion over final judgments and the appeal time that perhaps its draftspeople contemplated. That rule says that the judgment must be set out in a separate document and that that final judgment must be entered by the clerk of the court. In this court's decision in Diamond v. McKenzie, we learned that the purpose of 58 separate document requirement was to remove uncertainties as to when a judgment is entered. Here, Judge Walton's March 09 order is not a final judgment, and indeed I would posit that it is not a judgment at all. In addition, clearly the district court did not intend that the March 09 order, which is, to make matters a bit more confusing, dated May 09, the court did not intend it to be a final judgment. He said so, or the court said so explicitly in a decretal paragraph. In consequence, I would submit that the filing of a notice of appeal from that order would have disregarded the separate document teaching of or rule of Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 58, possibly would have been even contumacious or disregarding the court's decretal order that it was not an appealable order. And in all events,
doesn't he also say this case is closed? Isn't this?
He says the case is closed, but the court explicitly says this order is not appealable. And in addition,
notwithstanding the contradictory language, or maybe in spite of it or whatever, the docketing clerk docketed it as a final order.
Right. And yes, I think it is contradictory and it did create confusion. And to be perfectly blunt, we struggled with it. But we, in consultation with local counsel, came to the conclusion that it was not in compliance with 58 and that we had to wait for the memorandum decision. Also, although advocates, of course, have their views, as I do, of the merits of this case and believe in the merits of my case, I do like to see what a judge's rationale is before I do file a notice of appeal and advise my client. There are times when I read a judge's decision and become convinced that my prior view was wrong. I advise my client. My client can still, of course, ask me to take an appeal and push the issue. But I didn't know what the judge's rationale was.
That didn't happen in this case, I take it?
No, Your Honor, it didn't happen. I still do believe that our case is correct and that the court's decision should be reversed. The other point I want to make quickly before leaving this procedural issue is, I suppose one could construct an argument that rather than the appeal being untimely, it is premature because there wasn't a separate docketed judgment following the memorandum decision. It's a pretty rough spot to be in to get your case dismissed and have an appeal simultaneously be untimely and premature. Fortunately, I learned from reading this court's decision in McKenzie and the Bankers Trust Malice decision, I think there was a concurring opinion by the chief judge of this circuit, which explained that that particular facet of appellate jurisdiction is waivable, the separate document requirement. Many aspects of jurisdiction are not waivable. That one, I've learned, is, and clearly there is a waiver here. For here, the Department of Justice has kindly indicated in their papers that they agree, at least obviously not on the merits, but on this position. So with that, I'd like to turn the balance of my time to the merits, if I may. Your Honors, the HUD position here in the view of the appellants twists and strains as it must to defend conclusions which are 180 degrees the opposite of those required by the statute, the National Housing Act, Section 250A, and HUD's own regulation, Section 207.14A. What 250A of the National Housing Act does is simply this. Congress commands HUD not to allow prepayment of HUD assisted or insured mortgages where the Secretary's consent, quote unquote, is required. And if it is required, then the Secretary or HUD is commanded by Congress in 250A not to allow the prepayment absent making further determinations, essentially saying that the affordable housing is not necessary in that community. Here, as we learn from the October 07 General Counsel opinion of HUD, that the Secretary's consent is required only where, and 250A applies only where, certain kinds of specific HUD subsidies.
The General Counsel's opinion isn't what matters here, is it? I mean, it's the Secretary. Secretary gets to interpret his regulations. Is that correct? And under our, don't we give great deference to the Secretary in interpreting his regulations?
I think that the Secretary is certainly not obliged to follow the Council's opinion.
Council is staff, right? I mean, it's the Secretary that gets to decide.
Council is staff. That said, with regard to your question, Your Honor, I think where the regulation is not ambiguous, you do not have to give deference to it, and you interpret the regulation.
If the regulation is not ambiguous, then you don't need the General Counsel's.
Fair enough. I think that's a fair comment, Judge. And so the regulation.
So let's assume for a moment that you don't need. Assume for a moment that we don't, as Judge Griffith says, just assume for a moment that the Secretary is not bound by the General Counsel's decision. Can you still prevail?
Yes, sir.
You're not dependent on that. Okay. So your argument is that this language is unambiguous, right?
Yes, sir. The Section 207.14A of the HUD regulations says that the mortgage note shall contain a prepayment provision conditioned on 30 days' notice. The HUD position here, in the appellant's view, makes a mockery of that regulation.
HUD's position is, I think, that this is a regulation that governs the relation between the mortgagor and the mortgagee. That's their interpretation of it.
HUD's position, I would say, I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Isn't that their position? Isn't that the agency's position here?
Well, I think HUD's position is that the regulation is silent on the issue whether HUD can impose conditions on the prepayability, and since the regulation, they say, is silent on that, their action here, they say, is not inconsistent with the regulation. I think that's certainly my understanding, Your Honor, of HUD's position. And that's why I say it really does make a mockery of the regulation. You're right, of course, that the regulation is intended to govern the conduct between a mortgagor and a mortgagee. Here you had the New York State Housing Finance Agency, was making a loan in connection with the Mitchell Lama project, and apparently there was a tax-exempt bond financing, the proceeds of which were being used to fund that loan. Apparently, also, the bondholders wanted to be protected against the risk of an early payment, and so this provision was negotiated in, which arguably, and I want to get to that in a second, says that there can't be a payoff without the secretary's consent. The regulation prohibits the insertion of that clause, the variance of the form, and nullifies it as against HUD. In addition, so the point here, I think, is simply that the regulation plainly says that the in these types of the 207 program, the mortgage borrower is supposed to have a right to prepay on 30 days' notice. Here, you have a perversion of that right because they're imposing, HUD is imposing a $15,000, just to take one aspect of their consent, per unit requirement. That comes to, I think, about $6.8 million. If you look at the prepayment penalty, and I really think this is important, and this is going to bleed into a contract construction argument, if I may, but if you look at that attachment to the note, which is referenced right at this point where the asterisk comes in and it talks about the secretary's consent, what happens in this note is that no one knew it was a project being built what the stabilized rental income would be. And apparently the developer was concerned that when the final rent numbers came in and the final expense numbers came in, he wouldn't be able to afford the mortgage. So he bargained for the right to make a one-time special prepayment on what I would call income stabilization. The parties agreed, the mortgagor and the mortgagee, that that one-time special prepayment, which had a cap of, I think, $2,557,000, would be determined by the secretary. But it then goes on to say in that attachment that if they wanted to make further prepayments beyond that one-time special prepayment, there was a 3% prepayment penalty, which comes to about, on the whole $17 million mortgage, about $540,000. That 3% prepayment penalty then burns off at essentially 1% every 8 years.
Without this interesting history, one wouldn't glean any of that from the instrument that we're construing.
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't know the history. I have gleaned that all from the note because if you look at that attachment, it says that there's this one-time prepayment to make the mortgage payable out of the net rents, and then it says that there's this 3% prepayment penalty, which it does say 0.125% a year, so every 8 years you have 1%, so 3 times 8 is 24, so it burns off at the 24th year. We attempted to prepay in the 31st year, so there was no prepayment penalty. Out of that 500, that 550 had burned down to zero, and we're faced with a $6.8 million cost without regard to a use agreement that runs to 2017 or 18, I've forgotten, on the rents. So to condition the prepayment so severely where it's much, much more restrictive than it was in the note itself, I think is wrong.
How does any of that relate to the interpretation of the regulation?
Because the decision of the secretary should not be given deference because the regulation is unambiguous. It says on 30 days notice. To say that you have to pay $6.8 million and enter into a use agreement.
You would win if they only had to pay $1, right? Your point isn't that it's $6 million, right?
No, but I think it draws a highlighter through the point. But yes, if they said you have to pay $1 in addition to just waiting, giving 30 days notice, yes, I would say that violates the regulation. Only by a dollar, but yes, it would violate the regulation. Your Honors, may I save my remaining time for rebuttal? Thank you.
Whitaker?
May it please the Court, Henry Whitaker on behalf of the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. This case involves a mortgage that for decades has been insured and subsidized by HUD. And the Secretary reasonably determined that before the plaintiffs in this case could remove themselves from this housing program, that before they could prepay, the parties would have to take certain steps to preserve this property as an affordable housing property going forward, as they would have had to do if the mortgage had continued. And that requirement was plain from the face of the mortgage note that the parties themselves negotiated. A footnote to the mortgage note directly after the prepayment privilege gives the Secretary the right to approve prepayments. And I don't think there's any reasonable argument that the mortgage note can be interpreted to be ambiguous on that point.
Help me understand something. This is just a blind spot in my memory here. If they had tried to prepay before the regulation, what standards would the Secretary have used to determine whether to consent?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, before the
My memory is that the regulation that we're looking at came after the note, right?
That's incorrect, Your Honor. This regulation was indeed in force at the time the note was executed, and that's why we're talking about the 1977 regulation at all. And I think, as Judge Tatel's question suggested, the provisions in the regulations talking about terms that have to be in the mortgage relate to obligations between the parties to the mortgage. Those the lender and the borrower.
They do have a point, don't they? That the Secretary's position abrogates that provision.
With respect, Judge Tatel, I do not.
They negotiated this prepayment deal, and now it's no longer operative.
No, I disagree with that, actually, Judge Tatel. It doesn't abrogate the provision because they still have a right, a privilege, as against the lender. And so if, for example, interest rates decline.
They cannot prepay this mortgage, right, without complying with the Secretary's condition. Isn't that true?
Well, they can't prepay the mortgage without obtaining the Secretary's consent, Judge Tatel. That's certainly true. But there are certainly circumstances you can conceive of where the Secretary might very well consent to a prepayment where
I understand that there might be. But just from their perspective, they say, look, we have this mortgage. We have this regulation which says that it must contain a prepayment clause, right? That's what the regulation says.
It says a prepayment clause, I think, and it's talking about a privilege with respect to the lender. And that right is not being defeated
It is in practical effect. They can't prepay without complying with the Secretary's condition.
But Judge Tatel, I mean, it depends on how you look at the right. If the privilege is simply a privilege as against the lender and not against HUD, it's not being defeated because there may very well be circumstances in which the Secretary would consent to prepayment.
Yeah, but not in this case.
That's true, Your Honor. But I don't think it follows from that the right is, quote, meaningless. It may very well have meaning, and I think to determine whether it has meaning, you have to look at it on a systematic basis, not just in the lens of this particular case. I mean, so it is a right that has meaning. What it does, and what that provision in the mortgage does, under the Secretary's view, is it essentially transfers interest rate risk from the borrower to the lender, and so it does absolutely have substantive effect under our view, and even more than that.
Not in this case.
That's
the only issue that's before us is this case.
Well,
They signed a mortgage that had this provision in it, pursuant to a regulation that authorized it.
And well,
they say, wait, hold on. We have a regulation which says we have a right to prepay, and now we can't.
This case is before you, Judge Tatel, but to determine whether, for purposes of this case, the Secretary's interpretation has meaning, I think you have to look at the context of the dealings between the parties as a whole and what would have happened if the Secretary had consented. And in light of that, I think it certainly does have meaning. But even more than that, Judge Tatel, I mean, this regulation.
I don't have to buy that argument to be convinced about your position, do I?
You don't, Judge Tatel, absolutely not. And as I was just about to say, I mean, I think the broader point about these kind of regulations is that these regulations are the purpose is to determine whether mortgages that are negotiated by the parties to the mortgage are eligible for insurance. They don't bear or alter the substantive terms of the parties that the parties bring to the secretary to determine whether something is eligible for insurance. And if it happens that the mortgage contains a provision that is inconsistent with the regulations, what would happen is the mortgage would be declared ineligible for insurance. It wouldn't be that the mortgage would be deemed to conform to the secretary's regulation. And so there's nothing, even if you accept that reading of the regulation, Judge Tatel, it certainly doesn't compel reversal in this case. And keep in mind that these kind of mortgages, once the secretary declares them ineligible for insurance, there is something called an incontestability clause, which means that the validity of that mortgage cannot be challenged. And that the purpose of that provision is to make these kinds of mortgages marketable. And without that kind of security, it would be very unlikely that the secretary could just say, well, this or that provision is inconsistent with our regulations. It would be very difficult to market these kind of mortgages. And that's not the way the secretary's regulations operate. Your Honors, I'm happy to answer any further questions about the jurisdictional point or on the merits, but we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just quickly, Your Honors, the sentence in 207.14, the one sentence at issue here reads, the mortgage shall contain a provision permitting the mortgagor to prepay the mortgage in whole or in part upon any interest payment date after giving to the mortgagee 30 days notice in writing in advance of its intention to so prepay. It doesn't say that as between the mortgagor and the mortgagee, HUD is saying that this is to be the relationship.
That's HUD's interpretation of it. And that's HUD's interpretation of the regulation.
I'm sorry.
We owe extensive deference to an agency at this point, correct? It's interpreting its own regulation.
I think you owe deference under the law when the regulation is ambiguous, and you don't owe deference, extensive or minimal, when the regulation is...
What in the regulation suggests could be read as clearly saying it also bars HUD, also applies to HUD?
It says that the borrower shall be permitted, the tense is permitting, but it says that the borrower shall be permitted on 30 days' notice.
What about the footnote in the mortgage?
The footnote in the mortgage contravenes the regulation, and under established HUD policy and internal working law, when the footnote in the mortgage contravenes...
The footnote was there when your client signed the mortgage, correct?
So was the regulation.
Yeah.
And, by the way, my client's predecessor, well, I guess I represent both sides. So, yes, one set of my client was there when it was signed. But there's clear agency law that when the note contradicts the regulation governs. I don't believe it's really HUD's interpretation here, by the way, Your Honor, that the regulation only governs the mortgagor-mortgagee relationship. I believe their interpretation, I think this is a distinction, is that the regulation doesn't speak to whether HUD can condition the...
This is a regulation issued by HUD setting standards for mortgages, right?
Yes, sir.
It is, and it says the mortgage shall contain a provision permitting the mortgagor to repay. So this is HUD's regulation of the mortgage document. And HUD says to us, this regulation governs the relation between the mortgagor and mortgagee and is silent on whether HUD can require approval. And it has in this case. So I don't see where we, I don't see your argument that would suggest we can't, we aren't required to defer to that.
The
I mean,
simple,
I may agree with you about it, if, but since we aren't deciding this de novo, where, why isn't that a convincing argument?
You are reviewing it de novo, with all due respect. This is a, you are not reviewing the district court's.
Well, I understand that. I didn't, you're absolutely right about that. But we do owe deference to the agency here. You agree with that, if it's ambiguous. And they say, look, this is designed to govern the relationship between the mortgagor and mortgagee. And why is that an implausible interpretation of it?
Because
I understand you don't agree with it.
Because the regulation says that the mortgagor shall be permitted to prepay on so many days' notice.
It says the mortgage shall contain a provision permitting the mortgagor to repay.
So what your
requirement for what has to be in the agreement between the mortgagor and the mortgagee.
But think about how, I mean, this is the kind of fine slicing and dicing that gives lawyers, in my view, Judge, a bad name. What we're talking about now is saying that this regulation can say the mortgage must contain a provision allowing prepayment, but that doesn't mean that HUD has to honor that provision which it commanded the mortgage contain. That's absurd, with all due respect. If that was their intention, then they should have said in this regulation, the mortgage shall contain such a provision. It shall govern the relationship between the borrower and the lender, but when you come to us for our consent, that's a different story.
If federal agencies spoke that clearly all the time, we wouldn't have anything to do.
We don't want that happening in this economy, Judge.
I mean, it's always true. It's always true in these cases that the agency could speak more clearly.
Okay.
You're absolutely right about that.
The last point, thank you.
May I interject?
Sure.
Isn't a more accurate characterization of the regulation here is that it's silent on the point.
Good idea.
It's not that it discusses it in a way that's perhaps ambiguous. It just doesn't speak to the point.
I don't think that's inaccurate. There's a fancy Latin expression. I'm going to botch the pronunciation. Expressio unius. Help me out here, please. Okay, it says permitting. Okay, we're not being permitted to prepay. The fundamental right that is commanded in this regulation is being disrespected and dishonored by HUD. You are reviewing this case de novo. You're not deciding whether the judge or the district court erred. You're deciding as if you were in his place. And I would respectfully submit that the regulation is not ambiguous because it when it says the word permitting, it's incumbent upon the regulation writer. It's not a question of perfect clarity. There's an obligation of the draftsman of the regulation when it says the word permitting to say except or provided or some words to that effect. And in the absence of that, with the word permitting, I think to characterize it as silence is not a fair interpretation, in my opinion. The last point I'd like to make is I do ask the court to please look at Attachment A again. I think if you look through what happens after that one-time prepayment, which is clearly stated to be with the Secretary's consent, not only consent, but determination. And by the way, I would point out that it's interesting that in the footnote, the word that's used is approval and not consent. And the word approval, I think, has a more expansive feel to it than the word consent. And so they use the word approval in my view, and I am reading into the words as much as I can, using my experience. I think they were saying you have to go to the secretary. He does a bunch of calculations. He tells you this one-time penalty-free prepayment you're allowed to make so that you can pay the mortgage out of the rents. Thereafter, you're subject to a 3% prepayment penalty, which burns off over 24 over 24 years. So I really believe not only is the interpretation, is HUD's action contrary to its regs, but I believe there's been a fundamental misinterpretation of the contract. Thank you, Your Honors.
We're not going to take a recess. Yeah, okay.